is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a ton of books that have come out this week. Woo-hoo. And oh boy, this was a big Wednesday for comics. So let's
get takes off the dome.
This really went to the next level, I gotta say, which is why we're kicking things off with the first of three DC Next Level titles, Lobo number one from DC Comics, written by Scotty Young, art by Jorge Corona. Now, the rough idea here is these take place in continuity, but they're trying to give the same on-ramp that the Absolute books take, which is not ignoring continuity, but giving new reader-friendly takes from teams that are hopefully very passionate about the books. They may not be top-tier characters. They may be top-tier characters. We don't know. But again, we're talking about three of them here that came out all on the same day. And the first of them is Lobo. Pete, you love this version of Wolverine. What are you thinking?
Hey, don't jump on Justin's bullshit.
This one's in space.
fuck you. This is awesome. Also, I just want to take a moment. Fun cover. It's exciting when you're like just about to crack open a comic about a character you love, and the hey, maybe this is going to be awesome. By the way,
I call comics a cool one. I like to crack open a cool one.
Exactly.
Yeah. Nothing like cracking a cool one. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just think there's something exciting about the what's it going to be, what's going on, and I think this cover does such a great job of setting up the madness that is inside.
Yes, and a man sitting down.
Yeah, it's Lobo sitting.
We're talking about the art style, guys. The funness,
Jorge Corona,
that the art style brings. The vibe. The this is madness. Look at this crazy gun that has a knife on it.
Yeah,
great. Did you read beyond the cover, or did you not crack open this cold one?
I cracked it. It was great. I mean, I was a little disappointed that the first joke was about dog piss. But after that, I mean, we were having a great time. I mean, you know.
Is that because of what we call the dog piss incident?
Yeah.
With you.
Anyway, the plot of this book is Lobo is on a job. Unfortunately, he gets interrupted when every single mercenary in the universe has their contracts bought out by, I would say, a Mojo-type character.
Yeah.
Yes. There's a lot of refs in this.
Yes.
And I should clarify, just to say, like, I keep 23, like, ice-cold beers in my fridge and one ice-cold bottle of dog piss. And, like that guy in The Last Crusade, Pete chose poorly.
I don't know why you labeled them all the same. That's my big question.
Yeah, it's like a little puzzle. What kind of day is it going to be?
Normal roulette,
or dog piss?
It's dog piss roulette over your house.
Let's talk about something other than the cover and that it is madness. I would just throw out there that I do think this is a very good team to put on this book. Lobo is not my favorite character, but Scotty Young has been building himself up really nicely as a writer, particularly leading into profane and violent stuff with his big hit I Hate Fairyland. Jorge Corona, they've worked on more serious stuff in the past, so it's interesting to see them on comedy, but Jorge Corona certainly has made a name for himself working on Transformers, and also there was the Jurassic League was the thing that he did, which were the Justice League was all dinosaurs.
Yeah.
So this is a natural fit for both of them. I like the place where this ends up. It does feel a little meandery to me as it gets there, which maybe is kind of the point. Like, it's a little bit of a Shaggy Dog thing. But like Pete said, Jorge Corona's art is very striking. Lobo in particular is right at the center there. There are some good jokes throughout, particularly as Lobo is laying out his history. I thought that was a lot of fun, that sequence. Justin, what did you think?
I would just to talk about Next Level, now that we're getting into that, and we'll talk about a few books like Alex said. It's interesting because the Next Level would feel like it's like a refresh take or like pushing the character forward. When I think for all of the books we're going to talk about, it's actually not that. It's a return to form. The previous iteration where they made a new Lobo who was like sort of twee Lobo was more Lobo of a Next Level idea. This is very much like looking back, going back to the origins of Lobo, which, despite Alex's criticism, it's actually what that was. It was a little meandery. It was a Shaggy Dog story of Lobo just like fucking around in space and then killing people on his bike. So this, to me, feels like a great new version of that and is oddly like retro-futuristic in the way they're approaching this event. And that the next level may not be a description of the stories we're getting here, but more like bringing the next level talent that has been on their way up outside of DC into DC and giving them these characters that mean something to them. And that, I think, is a very smart way to approach this like sort of event, because it means each individual book can rise on its own, become what it wants to be. And that's what I think this book, and the I'll spoiler for my reviews in a minute, the rest are also doing that, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a cool way to say that. I appreciate what you're doing there. I do think this is a nice return to form and a kind of a great team to kind of bring this up to another level. So I am excited, and I enjoyed the fun, you know, like, oh, I can't park here. Oops, I ripped your arm off and then wrote my name above the parking spot. Just that's fun, you know.
That's a Pete dream. That's yeah, a Pete daily dream.
I was like, this is great. I'm having a great time. So this was a blast.
I like what you had to say about this, Justin, and sort of this whole branding here, because I think the other thing that they are clearly bringing, and even if this isn't necessarily to my taste, it doesn't look like anything else on the stands because of Jorge Corona's art. Yeah. And that's something that everybody has been lauding Absolute for, a lot of the DC All-In titles, that it doesn't feel like it is churning out content, but like it's not just there to churn out content. They are trying to make something that feels fresh and different and unique from other things that are out on the comic book stands. And again, to like you did, I will spoil my thoughts on all three of these. They all look different. They all feel different. And they don't look or feel like anything else that we're reading.
We had Tony Fleece, the writer of the Deathstroke book we're going to talk about, on the show. And he said that when he was talking to DC, it was like, what's your Image Comics version of a DC character? And I feel like that's literally what they're doing here. And that is a badass move. It continues DC editorial just choices where I'm like, big swing after big swing that actually keeps working. On Comic Book Club News this week, Alex broke down the top 20 trades.
Yeah.
And DC had, what, 17 of them?
Yeah.
Something like crazy? What? That's
wow.
It's working. That level of creative swing is working. It's what James Gunn talks about, what they're trying to do with the movies. That obviously takes a lot longer. They're actually doing it in the DC Comics right now, and it is working so hard.
Yeah. Well, let's see if Marvel is working as well as we turn to our next title. The Ultimates, number 22 from Marvel, written by Dennis Camp, art by Juan Fregeri. As we have been tying into the Ultimate Endgame event, the world is rebelling against the Maker status quo. Here, we dive back into the relationship between Captain America and Bucky, who is the Grand Skull, the new Red Skull in this universe. Would you, Justin? You're the camp leader of the camp.
Justin, you love camping.
Dennis continues to menace me with excellent comic books Dennis menaces me with another great issue. This is the fact that the Ultimate Universe is ending. This is the comic I'm going to miss the most. And this feels the most alive that the Ultimate Universe has been since this new event, the reboot, kicked off. Like, this feels like it is issues 4 of an Ultimates book that is just getting going. Great issue. I love this team. I think the art in this issue is really nice. I like the story. We get like a type of format we've seen before, where two characters end up on very close and end up on opposite sides of good and evil. But we get like just that modern twist on it where it's about radicalization and falling through the cracks and how that turns you into places you don't expect to be. He's not bad to begin with. The world left him behind, the Bucky in this issue. And it's just another great story that continues to be both resonant and excellent comic book work.
That's really awesome. Justin, I'm glad that you're having fun with this and it's reaching you in that way. I don't want to, what I'm about to say, affect anything that Justin said, because that's all valid.
I'm going to be so mad and I'm going to be so disappointed in you if you say anything bad about this comic.
Oh, well, this
so mad. I'm going to go drink a whole cold bottle of something out of my fridge. You
know what I mean? Oh, man.
And I don't want to jump on what you're about to say, Pete, but I really love the way this inspired me to be a Nazi. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Yeah, this made me want to pick up my tent and leave the campground because fuck all this. I don't need this comic at all in my life. This was an awful idea and very well executed, but no to that ending. No, I didn't know. I don't want to go here. I don't want to live here. I don't want to visit here.
Okay. You're talking about Bucky.
Yeah. I don't want to see a comic where Captain America snaps Bucky's neck, bro. That's not something I ever want to experience or ever want to have. You know, just because that's a...
Well, you like when Cap kills the Red Skull?
Sure.
Well, that's what he did, too.
Yeah. Maybe we don't know that he snapped his neck in, like, in a bad way. It could have been, like, working out a cake.
It worked out the old Nazi bone.
Yeah, I just... it was too heartbreaking, man. I don't like to see Captain America as, as on the bad side, and I don't like to see Bucky there either, so this was a nightmare scenario for me.
He's not on the bad side. He's putting him out of his misery.
Yeah, well, whether it's fucking Of Mice of Men moment or whatever,
Have you ever talked to an old person on Facebook? Haven't you kind of wanted to snap their neck a little bit?
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Pete, come on. Be honest.
You live in a country. I'm sure you're putting down a couple of oldies.
Gorgeous art in this issue. I am really curious to see what's going to happen as we head towards the ending here. Let's move on and talk about G.I. Joe, number 20 from Skybound at Image Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Andrea Milana. Lots of stuff going on here, but the main event is that Optimus Prime meets Duke, and they have a heart to high. Oh, excuse me.
I believe it's Octopus Prime.
No, it's Optimus. There is no Prime no more. Come on, guys. Stay
current. He's just Optimus.
Yeah, I will say, and this is a spoiler for Transformers, where he has lost his little faceplate, and now you can see his mouth. It's funny that on the cover, they're like, we're not going to spoil that. He still has his faceplate. And then you open up the issue, you're like, no, he has a mouth.
What do you think about the idea that the leader of the Transformers has to hide his or her face? What are they ashamed of?
As a follow-up question, do you think Duke should hide his face?
Oh, that'd be nice, a little, so he doesn't feel like, you know, Optimus is alone. You know, he's doing it in solidarity. That's fun.
Yeah. If Duke was stripped of his title, what would his name be? Because he is a Duke, right?
Right. No, and if he was going to pull out his matrix of leadership, would it be like pulling out his scrotum, or what would he do?
Wow.
That's where my leadership comes from.
Maybe his heart or his mind, but, that would scrotum. It's weird that you went with scrote.
Leadership, I took a seminar recently called Leadership Comes from the Scrotum.
Who taught that? I meant to ask you who was teaching that.
It was my father, and it was $500.
Wow. Oh, wow, he charged you.
Yeah.
I think he meant you came from his scrotum, not leadership.
Wow.
Oh, that's actually making a lot of the PowerPoint make a lot more sense.
Very graphic.
I would like to start by saying this is a cool cover. And I very much enjoyed the insides. I thought this was fun to see these two kind of sit down, talk about leadership. We kind of got G.I. Joe and the Autobots joining forces in this issue. So that's huge. They're going to team up against Cobra and the Decepticons. And, you know, Optimus was filling his boy in about, like, you know, what happened and how he gave over leadership. And it was cool that Duke was moved by that. I thought this was a cool issue, even though not a lot happens action-wise. It was kind of cool to have these two worlds collide.
They roll out at one point.
Yeah, they do.
That's pretty cool.
Go ahead, Justin.
You go.
I was just going to say that I don't necessarily mind this, and I think this is part and parcel with like what the Energon universe is doing, but I do think it's surprising how much time they're taking both in Transformers and G.I. Joe to set up Mask without really making it affect the plot in either Transformers or G.I. Joe. Because in Transformers, they're like, they set up a really interesting thing with Optimus starting to work with Miles Mayhem, and then immediately Miles Mayhem was like, I'm out! And here they're like, here comes Matt Tracker. You want to join G.I. Joe? And he's like, I don't think so. Leaves halfway through the issue. And I'm like, I don't know. I wish there was it was more integrated there. It felt more organic coming out of it versus... it feels like a very special crossover episode, which maybe they are leading into that Saturday morning cartoon flavor, but I don't know. It feels like it's jabbing at a book that otherwise I really like.
Well, I will say it is a crossover, Alex. And just like when we were kids playing with our toys, they agreed to share resources and information on their enemies and missions.
That's right.
So that's really exciting.
That's what sharing your toys is all about, Justin.
Yeah, they're going to share. They're
sharing your toys means.
I love the idea that Duke and Optimus are going to sit down and email each other every once in a while or hook up on Signal.
Oh, that's sick.
They're going to be like, hey, you left your Transformers in my sandbox. Like, oh, my bad.
Do you think Optimus at some point should have offered Duke a sip of his energy juice? Because that's kind of like central to this whole universe is Transformer food.
Humans don't drink Energon.
What do they do with it then?
No, we don't. We use energy differently. Are you new to the planet?
All I'm saying is we've talked about this a million times that Energon is basically like juice for Transformers.
Juice. I said that word.
Cobra Commander seems to drink it as well, I think. And so probably most of the Cobra Law folks, I think they drink it on Void Rivals. They did that in the last issue. So like Duke could drink some Energon if he wants.
He wants it. He wants to drink some juice. Yeah. I think it's interesting that when Optimus gave up the Prime, the Spark, he became a worse truck. Because in this comic, he's
dude,
like a
when you
very
give up leadership,
truck.
You got it. You're going back down a level. You know what I mean? You got to take your truck that is sweet. You know, it's Optimus Prime truck.
Yeah,
and then you know
he lost a couple like tailpipes. His truck nuts are gone. By the way, absolutely gone.
You can't,
I know that
you gotta
was
hang those up, bro.
I guess it's Alex's dad's PowerPoint
leadership
is right.
Comes from the screw.
Leadership comes from the
away.
Truck nuts.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like it also is telling that all the other Transformers left, and Optimus is like, I'll stay here because here I'm a truck. Here I make sense as a truck because on other planets they don't have trucks.
Well, listen.
You don't think it's nice that he was moved enough to stay? You don't think that's kind of cool that he's sticking to his guns and finishing his mission here on Earth?
I don't know. It seems like a waste of time either way, to be honest with you.
Well, it's definitely weird in both the Transformers comic and this issue. He's sort of like, I'm staying. And then everyone's like, why? And he's like, I don't know. I'm a truck.
Stupid
I'm a truck
humans.
Daddy. Well, it's just, it feels
like Energon juice.
I expected him to have a much more like a nameable mission. Like I have to stay on Earth for X.
Particularly because there's two humans that are supposed to be central to the plot, Carly and Spike, is that it?
Yeah.
Who are never there and never interacting, and every once in a while they're like, what's happening? And then you never hear a single word from them again.
Well, and there's something where, like, isn't Spike's dad in Optimus?
Yeah, he ate him. So this is what I'm saying, is that, like, Optimus ate a human, so clearly Duke could eat Optimus.
Or suck
the juice out of him.
Duke, you ate a truck. He's like a real Joe's eat trucks. Bye. Come on. Roll out.
Well, Optimus may be down a level, but we're going to go back to the next level with Batwoman number one from DC Comics, written by Greg Rucka, art by Danny. Now, this is an interesting one because it is supposed to be new reader friendly, but at the same time, there's a pretty direct continuation of the run that Greg Rucka never got to finish in New 52 for a lot of very bad gossipy reasons that we won't get into here, but Greg Rucka has been very open about in terms of his treatment at DC. But he is back. He's back with DC. He has a new artist on here who is Danny. And we are picking up with Kate Kane in an insane asylum. I guess a recuperation facility. I don't know exactly what we would call it.
Pete, what do you call the one you're in?
The Red Room?
Yeah.
There it is.
And Alice, her sister, is ostensibly dead, which we get a little bit of recap of events there. And then we are off to the races by the end. Pete, you seem pretty psyched about this one. Take it away.
Yeah, this was awesome. Love the cover. Fun last panel. She says a bad word. I wonder which one it was. But this was just a great start, I feel like. Love the colors, the kind of look of it. It's kind of reminiscent of that kind of famous Batwoman run, but not a ripoff of it. So I like the tone. I like how this is all kind of coming together here. This was This was just a blast. I'm just wondering about, like, the censor on the last word there. You know what I mean? Because it's four letters. One word.
Is it freaking you out? Mm-hmm.
Probably something very naughty. Justin, what did you think about this?
I thought this was great. Continuing what I was saying earlier, like, it has that look back. You have Rucka on this. Feels like he's bringing everyone in, establishing this sort of Batman-Joker relationship that Batwoman has with her sister, which is awesome. It's even more personal and clear in this issue what's happening between them, while also deepening the mythology around it. The real swing here, I think, is the Danny art. Batwoman, for whatever reason, has been this book that is always debuting a new type of artist, or a new, like the paneling in the earlier, the J.H. Williams stuff. Mm-hmm. And here we get this, like, the art really matches the backdrop. It feels very, like, Tuscan relaxation vibe, while we're getting it still being a gritty, turning that into, like, a gritty comic book superhero story, I think is fantastic. I love this one as well.
Yeah, me too. This is, I would say, less new reader friendly than the other two Next Level books, but it's gorgeous to look at, and it's a great Batwoman tale, and it's exciting to have this back, and it definitely makes me want to go back and read Greg Rucka's stuff to see what he's continuing here, because we get into some stuff here where I'm like, oh, I don't remember that at all. Okay, let's see what happens. So, great book, great kickoff.
There's a world of opportunity out there, beyond the typical 9-to-5, where purpose and grit come together, where the American spirit and ingenuity are welcomed in places that could really use your skills and your experience. We're talking about the Peace Corps, with volunteers living and working in communities around the globe. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you to dig deeper, get your hands dirty, to go that extra mile, to rise to the occasion, and meet challenges head on. And the love part? Comes from being part of something bigger than yourself, from building bonds that last a lifetime. It's knowing your hard work transformed lives, including your own. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries. Learn about benefits and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve.
Next up, another kickoff, The Sentry, number one from Marvel, written by Paul Jenkins, art by Christian Rosado. The big headline here is, though this is in continuity and following up on the previous status quo of The Sentry, this is Paul Jenkins coming back to a character he co-created with Jay Lee. And I've said this before, and this isn't to slag anybody off, but absolutely nobody has gotten The Sentry the way that Paul Jenkins does. Yeah. Like, every subsequent person who's tried to take it on has not quite nailed it. While Paul Jenkins did at least two runs on the character that delved into the mental health of the character in different ways each time, this one makes it a hat trick, I gotta say, at least in the first issue. I thought this was fantastic. It is disturbing. It really gets under your skin as you're reading it, as he digs further into The Sentry. I was a little worried about switching Jay Lee for Christian Zotto, but I actually think it's a really good comp for what Danny is doing versus J.H. Williams over on Batwoman, where it's reminiscent without feeling duplicative. I just thought this was a fantastic first issue. This is everything that I want out of a Sentry comic book.
Yeah, same. I mean, this issue felt like the vibe that the other DC books we've been talking about, where it is sort of looking back while also looking forward. Carving out a new way to look at the Sentry while still giving the Sentry that sort of slightly out of continuity, like him talking to Reed about Clock, Reed being like, hey, man, you're wild. I love hanging out with you, which always because the whole premise of the original Sentry idea was that he was the forgotten hero that everybody knew that was part of the Marvel Universe but had been erased because of the void and the mental health issues that plague the Sentry. And we get that flavor in here, which, all like you were saying, Alex, the other people who've taken on this character never quite nailed that. It's such a specific tone, and Paul Jenkins just has it.
Yeah, this is hard for me because I'm not a fan of the Sentry. I'm excited that Paul is back and you guys seem to be liking this. But it's a little too dark for my taste. And I don't know if it's just because I look for escapism in my comics that if things get a little too, I don't know, things that I don't want to kind of deal with, that it pulls me out or whatever. But yeah, this is a little too darker than what I want from a comic. So maybe if I liked this character, it would be easier for me to get in. But
it's not trying to be an easy comic book. He's basically like the Hamlet of comic book characters. He has the power of 1,000,000 exploding suns or 1,000 exploding suns. I never remember, but he
depends on inflation.
He barely can do anything. He's stuck in his own head all the time. And that's the purpose of it. Here, there seems to be a new iteration of the Void, new iteration of the Sentry. I'm very interested to see where this goes.
Well, last thing on it, Sentry is always doing and then the Void is undoing. And the flip here that I think we're going to get is the Void is doing bad things. The Sentry is sort of undoing in a good way.
Yeah.
And it's awesome.
Yeah, you got to avoid the Noid. Yeah, I get it.
100. Now you like it. Now you get it. American Caper, number 5 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Dan Houser and Laszlo, art by David Lapham. If you haven't already, check out our interview with Laszlo and editor Shelley Bond about this book that we did a week or two back, I want to say.
Yeah.
And they tease this very issue, which turns the focus onto the women of the book in a big way, and in some cases a surprising way. What'd you guys think about this one?
I like this. I mean, the interview that we did with them really helped to animate this for me. And this book just keeps adding layers. I kept asking them this question other ways, but like, how are you layering so much? They have a big team working on this book, and it feels like everyone has a creative hand, from the editor down to every writer and artist, and sort of the producer roles that some of the folks have on this. And they're able to layer it without it feeling like overstuffed or too heavy. And this issue both keeps all the balloons in the air of the characters that we're sort of scared of, nervous about, or interested in, but shifts the focus to these other characters that we've seen but not really gotten too close to. It's a hell of a balancing act.
Yeah, this is like, the art's fantastic. It's got such a cool kind of vibe in comparison to the subject matter. And yeah, this continues to be really interesting. And I appreciate the kind of character study we get in this issue. This continues to be kind of sometimes deeper or sadder than I'm ready to go, but it's always really cool and worth checking out, and I'm looking forward to what's going to happen next.
I just want to mention that I was out of town this weekend and I was reading my comics on the plane back to prep for this review. No.
Good.
And I got to this one and I was real worried the entire time. I kept being like, okay, ready to flip. I'm ready to flip. Here we go. I'm just going to like flip past this page. But yeah, I think it was mostly okay. Like, there was no dangling scrotums or anything like that. Thank you.
No leaders, you mean?
Yeah. Thank you, American Caper team, for making this mostly safe for the plane. I appreciate it. Next up, Deathstroke, the Terminator, number 1 from DC Comics, written by Tony Fleece, art by Carmine Di Giandomenico.
Good. Yes. Yeah. That's, I think okay, you nailed
thank
it.
Thank you. We had Tony Fleece on the show this past week, talked about this very book, and he corrected my pronunciation of Carmine. So there you go. Now I think I've gotten everything we need to know about the book. No, this is Slade Wilson is on a mission that goes horribly wrong, because of course it does. And now he is on the run and he is being hunted. There's also a lot of other interesting continuity that I think Tony very facilely layers in here, whether you know Deathstroke or not. But what did you guys think? Pete, you seem pretty psyched about it on the show.
Yes, this is great. I'm really excited for more of this. Very excited about the team that is on this. Really fun last panel. Great art, tons of action. I'm excited and nervous about how this is going to all unfold, you know, because you got this kind of dueling ideal here where, like, you know, he's a father and a horrible villain. So how do you kind of, you know what I mean? Like, can you be a great dad and also the worst person ever? I'm not sure you can. So I'm a little worried about all that, but man, I'm loving all the action and a lot of cool kind of stuff set up in this first issue.
The I said this on the live show, but the Carmine Di Giandomenico art is unbelievable. It's so immersive. It's so fluid. Like, you can see the progression. We talked a little bit about our first exposures to his work, and the progression to this, it's so much, it's like languid. It's sort of like you feel like you're falling into it when you're looking at it, and it's really great. Even something that is so visceral and violent as this Deathstroke issue, and I feel like this is like able to reset a lot of things. Deathstroke, a character that I don't really know the continuity of off the top of my head.
Really?
Yeah, I just know, like...
Oh, yeah, that's right. You just think of him as Deadpool. You have a weird block.
No, not this character named Deathstroke, Deadpool. Yeah, easy to understand the differences.
Well, if it helps, he's also called the Terminator.
Yeah, and his last name is Wilson.
Slade Wilson.
Very different, which is... You're telling me Wade Wilson and Slade Wilson are very different names, is what you're telling me right now.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Great. Then that makes total sense. What I am saying, though, is the inclusion of Rose here is great. There's a family element here, and then the reveal we get at the end, where it's sort of like challenging all of this stuff and sort of wiping the slate clean in a way, I thought was really cool, and I think we're going to get a nice new take on this character, which I think this character's been in need of a refresh.
If I could just say one more thing, Alex, here, please. Is that one of the cool things that he kind of revealed when we had him on our live show is that we're kind of getting a more Rose, which is exciting. And also seeing Deathstroke through Rose's eyes.
Like a bachelorette.
Is seeing somebody like a father figure, but they're the worst, is kind of an interesting idea. But also what's great is
I've never been exposed to like a bad dad before. So I'm excited to see if that bears any fruit.
Yeah, is that something that happens in society ever?
Sure. I'm glad you guys have had perfect dads your whole lives. And you know, that's great. But you know, other half, you know, doesn't get great dads sometimes. But I also am very excited about the pace and the action. You know what I mean? Because Deathstroke is such a kind of badass, and this is a badass comic. So I'm glad that's a real important part to this kind of multifaceted character.
Next up, Ultimate Wolverine, number 15 for Marvel, written by Chris Condon, art by Alessandro Capuccio. We are in the penultimate issue of this title, as for a brief while, Logan reverts to the Winter Soldier as we continue to explore Ilyana's origin in the Ultimate Universe. What are you guys thinking?
Well,
Wolverines!
Wolverine!
So this is like Earth Lobo in a lot of ways.
Oh, my God.
What do you think?
I disagree. I think that they're very different and not the same at all. But I'm enjoying this. I'm thinking that the art is really great on this. Also, cool cover. Yeah, but we're getting some real twists and turns here. We're getting, Logan goes under the mind control a little bit here, so that kind of slips back. But we kind of have this buildup of magic here, this in limbo. So I'm, Wolverine's been to hell a bunch of times, so it'll be interesting to see what happens when he gets to limbo. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I love to see this guy. How low can he go? Very short, which you'd think would be an advantage, but it's harder to be so flexible. When you get to limbo, the thing I love about this is just Logan and Jean Grey hanging and banging out in the world. Like, give me more of this. I want more of this. This reminds me of like the Age of Apocalypse. We saw a similarly like hard luck couple, the two of them in that world. This is much more like quote unquote realistic, or them just like out there doing stuff. I would love to see this continue on. I know it's crazy to say that in the Ultimate Universe.
Dovetails very nicely into my hot take, which is the shortest of all possible leaps. Just put Chris Condon on regular Wolverine.
Like, there it is.
There's nothing against it because I do like this title. There's barely any difference. So just yes. have him, port him over there, give him a Wolverine run ongoing. I think bring Alessandro Capuccio if you want. They'd do a great job. That's all.
Great call. Another
banging is
useful Justin. Hot take. Hanging and banging.
Hanging and banging. That's what Scrotums do too.
To be useful. Invincible Universe Battle Beast, number 7 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Robert Kirkman, art by Ryan Ottley. There was a little bit of a break here, but now we are back. Battle Beast is recovering. Our princeling has grown a penis, and a lot of other things going on in the world of Battle Beast, while the Viltrumites bubble in the background. This title is very fun and funny, and just Robert Kirkman is having a nice time. It really is what it is. It's not trying to be anything more than, like, here's more Invincible for you, but it is that, and it's good.
It's really edging on the Invincible-ness of it, because it's using the characters that we have in the story to tell Invincible-like stories, or scenes anyway. And then we're starting to see all these other characters that are like, okay. Like when what's his name is like, where is Conquest? I was like, what are you doing here? What's happening here? Where are we going? Are we going there? Are we doing that?
Yeah, I'm loving this. The art is fantastic. Battle Beast is such a cool character. But yeah, this is also a fun, I almost said episode, but a fun-ish where, you know, we kind of get everybody else reacting to Battle Beast because he's kind of out of commission. But man, he's got a big battle coming up and then the surprise twist that we get at the end of this. So it's going to be exciting to see what happens in that upcoming battle there.
And I continue to really ship whatever that alien guy's name and whatever that robot's name is, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Really, that's really it. Sweet.
Did you appreciate really the slung shot where you're like, oh, yeah, that's the perfect amount of dick showing there?
A nice curly little curly cue dick? Yeah, absolutely. I love it.
I like how much we saw of it. We really got to see it. And Alex, I love your take on romance in general where you're like, man, I love the sign guy from that movie and the girl he's showing the signs to. Yeah, they really made
love
Christmas
that guy who tends bar and one of the two women, either the blonde one or the other one. Hope they end up together.
Hope that Montague and other lady get together or die. One of the others should happen.
50-50.
Whatever.
Wonder Woman, number 31 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Daniel Semperi. This is kicking off the Wonder War. Go listen to our interview with Tom King, where we talk to him about this in the Comic Book Club feed. But here we are jumping forward to the future where the matriarch, a evil Amazon, is almost won. She has almost taken over the world, man. And it is up to Trinity, as well as Batman, who is Damian Wayne, and Superman, who is John Kent, to stop her. Things get dire, they get deadly, leading up to a point that we kind of knew was coming from the beginning. But what'd you guys think?
This continues to be great. Badass last panel. It's cool setup, right? We get this kind of God Killer sword and, you know, it just really just to get to that last panel was very exciting. This great art, interesting story, great use of characters. This continues to be great.
When we talked to Tom King, I was like, you feel very villain first with your take on Wonder Woman. And his answer is great. Go back and listen to it. But reading the book, it does feel like, especially with Wonder Woman, a character that doesn't have a lot of villains outside of the mythological villains, that he's gone out of his way to create this like really terrifying, or I guess Mouse Man wasn't terrifying, but like a really good rogues gallery for her here. And this issue is really setting that up while serving us up some great tragedy that we've enjoyed the comedy side of, and then we get absolutely ruined here for and punished for enjoying it too much. And just badass reveal. The art's great. This feels like such punchy comic book action.
Yeah, it's funny. This is also from the interview with him, but something that really coalesced a lot of what he was doing is I didn't realize he was Chris Claremont's assistant. Is that what he said?
Yes.
And he was like, yeah, I guess I'm just doing Days of Future Past. And I was like, oh, I guess you are actually, essentially. Or like, any sort of X-Men going to the future story. That brings a lot of it into focus, and it brings a lot of, like, the planning and forethought that's going in there, because that's Chris Claremont. I do think it's inherently different, the way that he's hitting this stuff, but very tense, very taut storytelling, upsetting tragedy. Curious to see what happens next.
It's crazy, though, that he's disguised it so well that I had not sensed that at all. I never made that connection at all, and I was like, oh, it was right there. The entire time, like from the beginning, it's been right there. We've read 2 years of backups setting up Days of Future Past, and we were like, ah, seems fun. No thoughts.
Amazing Spider-Man, number 24 from Marvel, written by Charles Soule and Joe Kelly, art by Jesus Saiz. This is continuing with the Death Spiral storyline.
Yeah.
Carnage, who is Eddie Brock, has watched Torment, this new villain, kill his father. Now we're jumping over to a little bit of the old Eddie Brock Carnage, the title that Jesus Saiz and Charles Soule did that was very good, but didn't get the love it probably should have. And was canceled, I'm guessing it probably would have played a much bigger role in this Death Spiral storyline, and they would have gone between 3 titles instead of 2. But whatever, we are where we
Great
are.
Great take.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably almost definitely what would have been happening. But instead we got this, and I continue to love this storyline. I think the character dynamics between Peter and MJ and Eddie are great. I think Torment is increasingly interesting as we get to see more of him. Really good crossover so far.
Yeah, I'm also really enjoying it. The very, like, boots on the ground, just, like, progression of this, like, where now Torment just is using Shocker's gloves. Very, like, it's like a part of his character in a way that I didn't expect it to be that meaningful, which I think is cool. The art by Jesus Saez is so... Mary Jane looks scary when she's revealed underneath the Venom goop. And that's cool. I think that's a good idea, because it's making this feel like the sun's going down in the horror movie and shit's about to be much worse. I also thought it was funny that Eddie Brock's dad, Carl Brock, like, he's like, Carl's dead. Everyone's like, oh no, he fucking sucked though. Every character does
including
it.
Including like, Peter Parker.
Yeah. I was like, he's like, from everything I heard about him, he's a piece of trash. I was like, Jesus. Okay. Hot takes.
This is great. I'm enjoying this. The kind of cranking it up is crazy. Torment, kind of tightening the spirals, as he likes to call it, is insane. But man, I'm loving Spider-Man and Venom hanging out, spending time together, chatting. It's just steaming up, and I'm here for it.
I wouldn't call it steaming. You think this is your romance meter's a little off?
Well, if they're just hanging out together, it kind of counts, man.
Believe me, I'm with you. I believe their superhero team up is the gateway to their romance getting back on track.
Come on.
So, like, I'm with you. I just haven't seen a shred of it yet.
I know. But they're in proximity to each other, so that's exciting.
Pete, is it cool to date a coworker from an HR perspective?
Like, and how cool? Like, on a scale
and
of
how cool is it?
5 well, to 10.
You've got to declare the relationship. It's like, it's a whole thing. You know what I mean? It's forms to fill out. It's, you know, it's a lot of extra work, man.
Stop. You're getting me all hot and bothered.
What info do you have to put in the form? Like, how in depth do you have to go? Yeah, definitely flashback to Amazing Spider-Man. It's important. It's an important part of this. Like, you have to write down, like, everything.
No, but you gotta, you know, put when the relationship started and that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah. Do you start off saying, "Dear Penthouse Letters, I never thought it could happen to me," or where do you put that on the
phone? I mean, that's my header on every email I send.
Oh man, that's potentially real.
All right, can we move on to Devil Let's on My Shoulder,
can we?
Number 4?
A I'm much
sure.
darker
from
place.
Dark Horse Comics, written by Kyle Starks, art by Piotr Kowalski. This is the final issue of this tale about a woman who was tortured by 4 men, getting her revenge on them. And we have been wondering when the supernatural would come in this series, and here it does in this final issue as things wrap up. Or do they? I thought this series was great, very dark. I am curious to hear what you guys thought about the conclusion here, but generally speaking, I really liked this issue.
Yeah, when we talked to Kyle, he was like, don't worry, she's going to get her revenge. The first issue is intense. We had only read the first issue at that point. We were like, yeah. And I do think he paid that off. The part I was dubious about was the supernatural nature of it. When I was like, you've done a great job of having us watch this great revenge story over the first three issues. Why do we need to go supernatural? And then he nailed it in this, I thought. Mm-hmm. I thought he was able to turn it in a way that didn't feel forced. It didn't feel like a last-minute add-on. It felt like it had been there the whole time. It ended up being a reveal in a really good way. Just really, really well done, I thought. Very dark. The end felt a little fast to me.
Yeah, but that's what I was sort of getting at, is particularly just the last page. It was like, and we're done.
Yeah.
But that's just one note in an otherwise very good, very dark, well-told revenge tale.
But it did remind me of how horror movies often end that way, where they're like, sorry, we're done. Maybe we'll do another one. And maybe that was intentional.
Yeah, I mean, I also thought this was awesome. It was pretty scary story. I mean, that pile of babies, that baby room was really freaking me the fuck out. But
if you walked into a baby room with a scythe, what's your first move?
I'm trying to carefully make sure that that scythe leaves that room as safely as possible.
Yo, but Pete, that's how you're cutting the apples.
Well, you got to go to a different room. You can't be in the same room with babies in that.
But they already have the apples, but you got to cut them up all at once.
That just seems dangerous.
There were a lot of, we didn't talk about this with the Ultimates, but there was a whole thing with minions of the Red Skull wearing baby flak jackets, which are a baby in front and a baby in back in case they decide to shoot at you. So lots of babies in danger this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy baby-ish. Plus, the tough thing about a scythe is, like, to really get one baby off, you got to stab another one. You know what I mean? Just kind of pull, and then you can pull it.
You're my crazy baby-ish. Anyway, Absolute Flash number 13 from DC Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Haining. We are kicking off a new arc here where Wally West is kind of feeling sort of lost. He's hanging out at the Dibney Home for Wayward Children, or whatever it's called, and bonding with Linda Park, his friend slash crush, as she finds out about his powers and they find out more about what's going on in Fort Fox. Justin, you're a big fan of this title. What did you think about this issue and new direction?
Yeah, just a reminder, I went from being pretty mid on this when it started to really coming to enjoy it, and it found its way to its absoluteness in a path I didn't expect. And this now it's become sort of the brightest of the absolute books in a good way. I think it's nice that the line has variety, and this is doing that. This feels like
brightest.
Yeah, like there's tragedy here, but there's like.
I thought you were just talking about the coloring or something.
No, well, I think it is like there's a lot of orange in this, which is also cool. Reds, but I like the energy of this book and the new storyline getting into really branching out from what we've done before, which felt very sort of closed loop for the first issues of this.
Yeah, I thought the daytime was nice. You got to share your fries, bro. You know, like awesome art, fun kind of villain, last panel reveal. Also cool Deathstroke preview and this one. You know what I mean? It really kind of sets it gives you a little.
Did you like the preview better than the first issue of Deathstroke?
No, I thought.
Did it make you want to read Deathstroke again?
It did, yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, great. I was like, oh, man, I got to go back and read this thing.
Wow.
It's really great. I'm enjoying this more than I thought. Jeff Lemire does a great job with storytelling, so even though a character that I'm not a fan of, I'm still having a good time, so that's pretty impressive.
Captain America, number 8 from Marvel, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Jan Basil Dua. Cap and co. are in Latveria, which is not under attack. There's a bunch of different forces who are trying to gain control of the country now that Dr. Doom isn't there anymore. And Cap has found out some dark truths about Latveria, as well as Salvation, the man who is currently de facto in charge. Meanwhile, Red Hulk and Nick Fury both want a piece of that old Latveria. It's all leading up towards the Armageddon event that's going to change everything starting this summer.
Whoa.
It's interesting because this does feel like one of the tip of the spear of Armageddon, right? In the current continuity.
Yeah, so for anybody who doesn't know, Chip Zdarsky is going to be writing this event. We're going to get a free comic book day preview. Then I believe it's coming out in June or July. I don't remember which. And the two big titles that are leading up to it are Captain America and Wolverine Weapons of Armageddon by Chip, as well as Reborn Ultimate Impact, which is a title that spins off of Miles Morales' Finding Origin boxes. And that is going to be by Chris Condon.
Interesting elements we have here.
Yeah.
Very complicated, I think. and this, I like this issue. I like the intricacies of a post head of state being taken away and what happens. But it's a very bureaucratic story here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to me that this is meant to be like the road to Armageddon, because I'm like, this road feels a lot like reading the news.
A lot of the big Marvel stuff has felt like that lately. Like, I know some people liked it, so that's fine. But One World Under Doom was very much like that for 10 months or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I wasn't into that storyline. I was pretty glad to be done with it. And then they were like, you know what? We're still in Latveria, and we're still going with this. And here we go. And the next event is also about Latveria. And I know there's a movie coming up called Doomsday, so you got to get that content out there. But this is external to this comic, but a lot of this feels to be the opposite of what we're saying with DC, that it feels like we got to get content on the stands versus, hey, let's see what creators want to do and take a big swing. To talk specifically about this comic, I agree with you that there was a lot of good stuff and interesting stuff happening around Captain America, but Captain America, throughout this run so far, and we're now 8 issues in, has felt like a figure who's like, I'm just stuck in the middle here. What do I do? The world's very complicated. And then eventually it's like, gotta punch somebody. That's what I gotta do. And that's where we end up. I don't know. It's not quite connecting for me.
It just feels like there's a lot of words that have to be laid down for some reason. Because I think there's a way to do this that's a little bit more like Cap's in the castle Latveria, and there's three people storming the castle to run it. Mm-hmm. And so it can be a little more like active, like, oh no, this is all happening now, when like you're saying it feels like Cap's been like, hey, this situation is complicated, and everyone's like, I agree, Cap, here's all the stuff that's going on. And I'm like, that makes me feel like it's complicated.
Successful fallout from One World Under Doom so far has been the Dungeons of Doom series
Yes.
that Bill Kenny Johnson and Benjamin Percy are doing, and that's doing exactly what you're saying. It is active. Yeah. It is like, this is happening now, and we got to deal with this, rather than, all the politics of it. And that's where they want to lean, but like, I don't know.
Well, and similarly, the story that took place during One World Under Doom, where the Red Hulk featured here was escaping from the dungeons, mm-hmm. and it was about how how he did that by assembling this team, and it felt like, oh, this feels like what we're going toward in this new iteration of Latveria, and this now feels like a step at least further out, where we're now re-establishing a political sphere, and that feels like One World Under Doom did too much of that, to your point.
All right, why don't we move on, talk about Exquisite Corpses number 11 from Image Comics, written by Jay Grayson with James Tynion IV, art by Gavin Fullerton with Michael Walsh. We're getting down to it. I believe there's one more issue of this season of Exquisite Corpses as we whittle our way down to two contestants that are fighting for the crown that will determine the ruler of America. I'm still not 100% clear on this. There you go. That's what's going on.
Yeah, this is getting crazy. I mean, the creepy rabbit mascot finally got taken care of. That guy was driving me nuts. Tons of action, tons of madness. yeah, I'm interested to see how this shakes out. I love the art, the colors and the shading, the mood of it are so cool. So, yeah, this has been really solid.
You know, it feels like it was this big world, and then we explored the big world, and there was so much happening. And then this issue, I feel like, featured a lot of characters being like, hey, only two people are left alive. I was like, really? That seems crazy. And then they're like, now they're going to fight. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. It felt like the world just shrunk really hard. And I was trying to think how either more issues where we could slowly work through this a little bit. Because I really like the story. I like the Exquisite Corpse nature of how James Tynan sort of did this, where it was like him and another writer were on every issue. But it was a shared thing, was also very cool. But I feel like maybe the solution would have been to split the sort of rich person stuff and the boots on the ground stuff out, maybe alternated issues or something, so we could really understand all that was happening. And there was more space on either side to tell the stories, because this issue leaned into some more of the rich person stuff. And I was like, I just don't understand exactly who's who and what the stakes are with each of them, because it's too hard to tell.
That, I think, is the inherent problem with this. And I will say it's a book that looks great, and I'm intrigued to read.
And I enjoy. And I still like reading.
Exactly. And I 100% will read the second season, absolutely. Is there are too many characters to keep track of everybody, because you're supposed to keep track of the people in the tournament. They're flashy, they're big, but then you also have all these people outside the tournament who are the rulers of the world, and then you have all these people in the town. And at any given moment, I'm not 100% sure who I'm rooting for, who anybody is, what their motivation is, even though we've been following them. And I don't know. There's a bunch of, not to like backseat, right? But like, there's a bunch of different ways this could go. The character who has popped the most is the medic whose dad was the sheriff and left.
Yes.
She's the one who's the most, to get back to the discussion we were just having, she is the most active. She's the one that has the most intrigued backstory. She has the one that is the most drive and is the most central to the action. Focusing on her while all this other stuff went on around her may have been a more streamlined way to go, because it is, like, there's the guy with the punk, I don't know, vest or whatever he's wearing that's taking the kid. And like, I don't know. Like vaguely remember him, but that was a month ago. And I'm like, oh yeah, okay, I'm not sure what your deal is. I'm sorry. I know this old lady is manipulating things outside, but I don't know why or how or anything like that. Yeah. So yeah, there's a lot of elements in play. It's bursting with ideas, but when they get into a second season, I hope they can figure out a way to, particularly because they've eliminated most of the characters that we've now spent 12 issues with, I hope they can find out a more like straightforward way of doing this. That's all. But we shall see. New Titans, number 33 from DC Comics, written by Tate Bromble, art by Sammy Basri. This is not part of Next Level. This is all in, but this is a new take on Titans. And I'm almost hesitant to say anything because I thought this issue was delightful to read. It is, I don't know. All I'll say is that like Tate Bromble has found a completely unique take on the Titans characters. Even by looking at the cover, which introduces like, here, check out this new team of Titans. You don't know what you're getting into in this issue. It's unique. It's smart. It's funny to me. And this is like starting to skirt spoilers. But we put up a preview and somebody's like, I feel really weird about how Corey is talking in this preview. But other than that, I'm intrigued and I like seeing all these characters. And it becomes immediately apparent what's going on with Corey talking and why she's talking that way in this issue. So overall, I just thought this was great.
Well, let me just say, as someone who looks like they work at Starbucks, this is so anti-coffee and I'm not here for it. You know what I mean?
Thank you for speaking out and speaking your truth, Pete.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Your grande truth. Your venti truth. And if you guys want to spoil it, that's fine. But just like, no. I was kind of delighted reading this issue because I didn't know what I was getting into. And that's very rare.
Well, it's especially for Tate Bromble, who's been doing a lot of great comic book work. But this feels like a bridge title that brings Tate's style into like some very over the plate comic book work. Like, to combine that, this is such a comic book story that I thought really worked. And the reveal at the end of the quote unquote new Titans, I was like, I don't know exactly what it will mean, but I was pretty psyched about all of it. Like, yeah. I liked all the stuff that happened, whether or not all of this sticks. The characters that ran in at the end, I was like, I like all of these characters.
You don't think it's just Big T kind of, you know, making a move and
Mr. Lipton?
Yeah.
Mr. Lipton making
Or do you mean like... Mr. T? Big T. That's what you call him because you had a dog piss incident with him as well.
Regardless, recommend picking up this book. Don't read about it. Just check it out. Trust us on that one. Cyclops, number 2 from Marvel, written by Alex Pagnidel, art by Roger Antonio. Cyclops has lost his visor. It broke apart, and he is in the woods with a young mutant while they are on the run for the Reavers, who have been rebooted by Donald Pierce. I love the first issue of this. I thought the second issue was great as well. Pete's about to say that Cyclops is a dick, but that's the point of this issue, is he's a dick, and the young girl tells him he's a dick, and he's going to figure out maybe how to be less of a dick.
I mean, that's worth it for me. If we can go down this journey and Cyclops can be less of a dick, I'm all for it. But right now he is dicking it up, you know. This guy's just like a scrotum dragging along the ground. It's just painful for everybody involved.
Yeah, he's still got the scrotum of leadership, but will he give it up to be less of a dick?
Yeah, well, like how Optimus gave up the scrotum of the Transformers to someone else.
Yeah,
and that's why you can see his face now.
His scrotum previously was on his face. He had stretched it all the way up over his nose.
I think that's how... is that how Transformers work?
Nope.
It is more than meets the eye.
Yeah, do his balls hang low? Do they wobble to and fro, Pete? How do you feel about that?
Well, because obviously we know where the truck nuts hang when he's a truck. But when he's Optimus, aren't they just like right here on the face?
And Cyclops, where is his scrotum?
Well, that's his problem, is he can't find his truck nuts, and so he's basically powerless.
He's powerless without his nuts.
This feels like a limited series that is going to be character rehabilitation for Cyclops, and I like that it's just him being like, hey, I'm in charge, and the other mutant is like, no, bro, no. Like, I'm going to fix you. And it's like... It's good. I think this might be the path forward. We might get Pete back on board out of this. I also think this is wild to me how much of this issue is just about the Reavers. Mm-hmm. Like, we're just really getting into some Reaver life.
That feels like an extension of what Alex did on Sentinels as well. Yes. Just sort of extending those body modification ideas. And I love that. Like, it's really dark and gross, but... You instantly know who these characters are and how they relate to each other. They're all very distinct and designed distinctly by Antonio. So I'm really into them as villains. I'm always into them as villains, but I think they work really well here. And
the art's
amazing. Good as a foil for Cyclops.
Yeah. Foiled. Foiled. Cyclops has been foiled.
Doctor, to a guy who is... energy from art by Gary Frank. Geiger is teaming up with the Northerner, and they meet some kids, and then they leave the kids, and then some other things happen.
Yeah, we get a little nicer side to the Geig here. Normally he's pretty kind of cold and closed off, but here he's being a great dad. He's handling story time, and so it's fun to see this, you know, you got kids riding the two-headed wolf dog. I mean, this is just such a different kind of side to the Geig. So it's nice to see. It's not what we normally get. So enjoy it while you can. You know what I mean? But yeah, this great art. I'm a Geiger head. So anytime we can get any more Geiger stories, I'm all in.
Pete is a Geiger counter because you can count on him to enjoy Geiger every issue. This was a real departure from Geiger of the past. He's really laughing it up. He's telling stories. He's warming up. And that's why the reveal at the end of the issue, I was like, oh, perfect timing for him to be chilling out a little bit. And honestly, I think him having the foil of the Northerner with him is helping a lot to make him open up a little bit from a storytelling perspective. So I really like this direction, and the reveal at the end, like I said, was awesome.
End of Life, number 2 from DC Comics, written by, once again, Kyle Starks, art by Steve Pugh. This is a DC Vertigo title about an assassin who is forced to run home and hang out with his father, who he hates and hates him, in a small town where he grew up, while a cabal of assassins are on his tail. Very funny issue. I really love this main character, who is just the biggest jerk in the entire world. Yeah, Kyle Starks is on a roll, man.
Yeah.
Yes, and agree with all of that. It's very funny. It's very cool. Man, the art just crushes in this. The Steve Pugh art is so good and so fun. Huge reveal at the end, and I mean huge.
Yeah, the art is great. Fun last panel. Murder Brothers are fun. Yeah, it's, you know, sometimes you have a douchebag character and you don't root for them, you know, because they're too douchey. But doing a good job of kind of giving us just enough of an inside to actually try to pull for this guy. So impressive work. And yeah, fun joke at the end there.
And also great details throughout this issue as they explore the town and the farmer's market. There's just so many ridiculous jokes with the name of stores and the people that we meet and everything else. So really good book. Definitely pick this up if you haven't. Infernal Hulk, number 5 from Marvel, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Kev Walker. In this issue, we're jumping between a bunch of different things as the now evil Infernal Hulk fights an angel, it certainly seems like. And at the same time, Bruce and Betty are feeling pretty bad about what's happening with the world. What'd you guys think of this one?
Yeah, this is great. The art's unbelievable. It's a little surprising because it was like they made such a big deal of Bruce kind of walking away and being like, no, I'm done. I don't want to have anything to do with this Hulk. You know, we're separated. I don't want. And, you know, so I was surprised, but also kind of being like, yeah, I don't think you can walk away, Bruce. So, yeah, I thought this was a good issue, needed to have happen. Got a little weird with the kind of like, I was like, are they talking about God? Like, what is happening right now? Other than that, this continues to be a blast. But again, the art is just, just unbelievable with some of these kind of character designs and stuff. And this is a cool cover we're looking at.
Yeah, the body horror art of this is unbelievable. Like, there's a panel where the Infernal Hulk's jaw is just like flipping way out over his mouth, and is really awesome. And I love the way it goes from that to like the very normcore Bruce and Betty trying to deal with their guilt as it manifests in front of them. Philip Kennedy Johnson telling the horror story that he's wanted to tell for so long. I'm really enjoying this.
Kill All Immortals 2, number 3 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Zach Kaplan, art by Fico Osio. In this issue, our Norsemen, our Vikings, are fighting directly with Genghis Khan and his people. Genghis Khan and his people are immortals. Our Vikings are no longer immortals. Can they kill all immortals? We'll find out in this issue.
No, man. This issue. Stay tuned.
Yeah. Or stay this tuned. Next issue. There's
one. Yeah, this is cool. I mean, a lot of twists and turns, betrayals, fighting, amazing art and action. This is a fun read. I really love the colors and the vibe to this. This continues to be very enjoyable.
The idea that these people are fighting over a sort of a conch of immortality,
right,
is really in this issue. It struck me; it's just really working. Like, I really like that idea, and because the way there's an internal
debate between, love a good conch,
a conch conch, not a conchu, a conch. The way that the family's debating on what they should be, their goal should be to take down the other family or to recapture their immortality. They have the others have the immortality. That's the commodity. That's the MacGuffin. It just makes for like it's really caught me up in the high stakes mythological stakes with the down and dirty. Let's kick ass right here, and the art is really sleek and cool. So I like this.
Superman Unlimited, number 11 from DC Comics, written by Dan Slott, art by Lucas Meyer. This is continuing the reign of the Superboys. And here we are focusing on John Kent taking on a fifth-dimensional imp who sees John who sees John as his arch enemy, even though John hasn't met him yet, and we explore what that means and what that relationship means, leading to two big twists at the end that are both spoiled on the cover.
That's true. Yeah, it is. I have fourth dimensional, but maybe I'm wrong. Yeah.
Yes, he is a fourth dimensional demon. That's right. Yes. Sorry.
His son of a glitch line was funny. I thought that was kind of a fun bit there.
And sorry, I will mention real quick that we did talk to Dan Slott about this on our live show a couple of weeks back. I know we plugged a lot of different interviews here.
Sure, but I have.
Listened to them.
I was hoping we'd maybe go a couple of comics, but I guess not. That's cool. Nope. You know what I mean? I guess we do too many interviews, would you say?
Or we talk to the people. We talk to the people making the comics, and that's great.
I
honestly, his enthusiasm, and I don't know if we've said this, but like we talked to him for like 30, 40 minutes, and then we talked to him for another 30, 40 minutes after that. So that's what happened. That's what happens when you talk to a creator as enthusiastic as Dan Slott, who just talks so much more about literally just comics. This issue's great. This issue gives us a sort of flip reveal that is so exciting because of what happened in continuity to put us in this position with young versus old, which is really cool. I love the Super Sons, and what we're getting here is really nice, I think.
Yeah, and I'll just also give a shout-out to Lucas Meyer. I thought the design of the fourth-dimensional demon was very cool and fun.
Yeah, it is cool, yeah.
Mark Spector, Moon Knight, number 2 from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Dev Milia-Promenek. The first issue found Mark Spector brainwashed and stuck in a prison by a mystery enemy, eventually freed by Zodiac at the end of the issue. Here, we find out who that mystery enemy is, and we get several big fights and some twists and turns. Not the biggest Moon Knight fan, really love the first issue of this, was nervous about them seemingly wrapping everything up in one issue, but man, this issue was great as well. More twists and turns, and ridiculousness and action.
Yeah.
I might have a fun time with the old Moon Knight.
Hey, how about that?
Alex is having a Moon Knight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm also having a great time with this. It is taking some fun twists and turns. I won't reveal the villain if you aren't. And fun use of Zodiac. Tons of cool kind of like panels and villain stuff. So I was having a blast with this, but I'm a sucker for Moon Knight. So nice to see that you are also enjoying it. More please. This is great.
Yeah, I think the previous run that Jed McKay did on Moon Knight got so big and confusing to the point where Moon Knight wasn't even in it. And it was like having the Moon Knight supporting cast be the main characters. This, I think, is doing something that is working better for me, where it's just getting back into Moon Knight and some of the characters that are immediately next to him. The reveal here is a major villain that we've seen as in Moon Knight's Rogues Gallery. I don't know how many Moon Knight Rogues Gallery members we could all name here, but this is one of them.
I could name two, I think, offhand.
Wow.
Are you talking about the reveal in this issue and the other character in this issue?
Yes.
Nice. Really good. Wow. Really good.
Thank you.
Recency bias right there.
Yep.
The Punisher, isn't that a Moon Knight villain?
I think so. Spider-Man, is that a Moon Knight villain? Pete, you would know. Lobo? Pete, Space Wolverine?
Moon Knight fight himself? Sun Knight?
Jake
Lockley. He hates the sun.
Yeah, the sun is his enemy. Anyway, I'm talking. I have the Khonshu right now. So why don't we move on and go from Moon Knight to Night Past City, number two, from
Dark Horse Comics. Also answered his own question in there.
Written by Matt Kent, art by David Lapham. This is about a all-powerful Superman-type superhero who can never go to sleep, but when he does fall asleep, he goes to another world where he has no powers. His Lex Luthor has found that out, as well as found out how to track him there. It has decided if I can kill him as a human, I can kill him as a superhero. This issue flips the perspective to go from the villain's perspective and show how he got there and what he's doing. Great tripped out series. Really good. I was actually very excited, and I know Matt Kent always does this, but the next issue is the last issue, and I do love how, like, tightly plotted and put this together this is, that they aren't going to have this drag on forever, because I think it's going to hit a very nice conclusion.
It's interesting how he works, and not to keep saying this, but we did talk to him way back in New York Comic Con, and he was teasing this, like, almost renaissance period or major creative period he had entered, and a ton of stuff was coming out. And I imagine this was in the bucket that he was talking about there, where he just gets a big idea and then tells the story in the form that it needs to be told in. That's why, like, this is a three-issue series that this second issue goes, like, so through so many loop-de-loops and, like, really drills down at points while also giving us this big bird's-eye view of just the superhero arch nemesis dynamic and how complicated and simple it can be at the same time. This was one of my favorite reads of the week.
Nice. Yeah, I also love this. The art style is so cool. Enjoy the world that it kind of sets up. I was a little confused, but, there's a lot of twists and turns, and you got dream worlds and real worlds and stuff like that. But, very enjoyable.
Planet She-Hulk, number five from Marvel, written by Stephanie Phillips, art by Aaron Cooter. In this issue, She-Hulk is joining up with some new allies and finding out some surprising truths about the world of Sakaar. Pete is doing an impersonation of her holding up the planet on the cover. You're doing a cool great cover. Job.
Thank you.
Kiddo.
This continues to be great. Justin broke the news of the live show that this was going to be canceled or cut short.
The next issue will be the last issue.
That's heartbreaking. I'm having such a great time with She-Hulk on Planet Sakaar.
To be clear, it was canceled for some really gross tweets.
Wow, that's a callback on that. That's a hat in a hat. But
canceled for really boosting up like Dilbert.
Oh, no.
I think Planet She-Hulk tried to do some sort of trivia thing, paying tribute to Scott Adams.
Well, we had a good run. No, Stephanie Phillips is great. This is awesome. I just think it's such a cool idea and very well executed. I like enjoying She-Hulk solve these kind of problems on different worlds and her take on stuff. It's a great idea. Art's amazing. I'm super sad that it's not doing well. I think it's just so good.
I agree. I'm so bummed. This is such a tragic cancellation because I think the Aaron Cooter art is so good. I think to come back to Sakaar and have She-Hulk be both a Hulk but also someone who is just speaking down to earth to us and being like, these people are crazy, which is such a nice refresh on the Planet Hulk, the very self-serious tone of that and the epic nature, gladiatorial nature of that. And this being very like down to earth person dealing with the same high stakes gladiatorial place, I thought was just a great idea. And I wish this had found an audience because it certainly found an audience here with.
Yeah.
I just want to give another shout out to Aaron Cooter's art in particular. Huge fan of his. He is an artist that I will follow absolutely anywhere. And it's really interesting reading this title and see how he has changed his art style for this. He has gone from being very much in the mode of like a Frank Quitely, sketchy, heavily inked lines to here. There's a lot more shading going on throughout. There's a close-up of like almost sort of upshot of She-Hulk's face in one panel that was very striking in this issue in particular. Yeah. So, yeah, good stuff. The Lucky Devils, number 7 from Image Comics, written by Charles Soule, art by Ryan Brown. In this issue, a lot of stuff goes down as hell starts to fall apart and truths come out,
man,
with our demons who are trying to manipulate hell into destroying itself and maybe the Earth as well. What'd you guys think?
Yeah, I have two wildly specific takes here. One, I think Ryan Brown's tooth art, tooth presentations of teeth is excellent. I've rarely seen more topographical teeth, very textured teeth on all the creatures in this, all the demons. And then the second take is you rarely see the M. Night Shyamalan movie Devil reference with reverence, and we get that here. A shout out to it in a way that I did not see coming.
Yeah, this continues to be really creative and interesting and cool. Oh shit moment on the last panel, you know, but, yeah, this is just also fun, amazing art, interesting kind of, a story with the take on heaven and hell here and the demons and humans. And yeah, I just think this is in such great hands on this team. They've done such great work and, yeah, this is a cool idea. Very well executed.
The Mortal Thor, number 8 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Juan Cabal. This issue once again turns towards Asgard, or at least the Nine Realms, to find out what's going on there with, oh my gosh, I'm totally blanking on his name, brown-haired Thor.
Oh, the other
Magni?
Thor.
Is it Magni or something like that? Whatever it is, the main character of the book is hanging out with Blackjack O'Hare, the space rabbit, who I believe used to hang out with Rocket Raccoon, among other folks. And meanwhile, Enchantress is making some big moves in the background. While I was personally a little disappointed the first time we got an issue like this, I like this issue much better. And now that I see the pattern they're going for this title, I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Period. Oh, nice. Did you... No? Okay, sorry. I thought you were looking up the character.
No, I am. But
okay, great art. Yeah, I'm not sure what it is.
If you could not talk while Justin's doing research, though, I'd really...
This is important.
Keep it silent. So
yeah, I mean, that's what... Concentrate. We want to build the tension of the dramatic reveal as Justin frantically flips through pages of a comic book to get to the character.
We started this podcast, and we've told the story a million times, because we wanted to create an audio library, a place where people are quiet, we talk in hushed tones, and research happens.
Oh, man. Just bring some silence into your lives. You know, just take it down and not.
Magni is his name.
Oh, I was right. Okay, great. I'm glad we spent time on that.
Yeah. That
ASMR from the boys.
That arrow bit took a little bit too long for my taste, but.
I was just right. You got to.
You love so. Arrow.
You thought. It didn't take up too much space in your brain because I couldn't pay attention. Once the arrow was fired, I was like, I don't give a fuck anymore. I need to know who's...
I do. Listen, I'm going to agree with you. It did go on a season or two too long, and I think like it peaked in season two, but I don't know. It is what it is at this point.
And this is where we finally get Pete's Arrow Corner? Wow, what a twist.
Oh, man.
I agree with you, Alex. I like this as a 1-2 punch with the main rubber band hammer Thor, construction worker Thor on Earth. And this doing all of the myth stuff, doing all of the big high drama, melodrama stuff. And when the arrow hits, it was a bummer.
Yeah, it was a super bummer. Also, like, you know, one character is like, Thor's dead. And I was like, oh, I really... didn't want that to be the case. I wanted the hammer guy on a rope to really be Thor, so I don't know.
I think there's a good chance he is, but I guess we'll see as we continue to read this comic and move on to the next one, Super Creep Show, number 1 from Skybound at Image Comics, written by Kieran Gillen and Ryan North, art by Rossi Gifford and Derek Charm. This is even more Tales of Superhero Darkness. Here we get one from Kieran. Oh my God, I'm totally blanking on the Kieran Gill one. The Ryan North one was about a super speedster who goes slightly insane.
Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. Yes, a Spider-Man.
Get it? Because the cover is a Spider-Man reference?
Mm-hmm. I got it. What'd you guys think about this? Spooky good times?
I think we should do more of these.
That's a fun way to put it.
I like them. I mean, the Spider-Man one was a story well told. I think this idea has occurred to comic books before. So it wasn't like breaking any crazy ground. I thought the Speedster story was a little more original in its take, I thought. But equally horrifying, the art on both, I thought, was – I liked that it was pretty different but effective.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I agree. I really like, too, the big different takes on the art. You know, like the first art had like kind of like an old school kind of comics vibe, which was great. And then the second one kind of almost had like an Archie comics kind of vibe, which was really fun.
Well, the second one is Derek Charm, who has done Archie comics. So I think that's why that came through for sure.
Wow, it's so great that I picked up on that. You know,
you sensed it.
Yeah.
But you didn't do the research.
It's all in there somewhere. Yeah. But yeah, I think two great
Pete,
stories.
Do you want us to pause while you look that up? We can stop talking.
Oh, there we go. Well, I just like a little moment of silence. Yeah, you know, sometimes it's nice to just take it down.
Yeah, people love silence on in their entertainment.
You know what I mean? Hey, are you on a jog right now? Stop. Just take a breath.
By the way, your fitness app is doing wonders for my waistline. I want to be fatter. That's what I'm trying.
The idea that we good every once in a while is like, hey, anybody jogging, stop. Sit down.
Just take a moment. Take a eat breath. That candy.
Enjoy where you are instead of running past it. You know what I mean?
Okay, now we're going to – that cheesesteak isn't going to eat itself.
Oh, man.
Whatever it could.
Reverse health nuts. Yeah,
there's our creep shows.
Run to your cheesesteak.
The cheesesteak that ate itself. Oh boy, call me Skybound. Okay, Wade Wilson, Deadpool number 2 from Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy.
Not Slade Wilson. Sorry.
Different person, similar look, different
Don't
person.
Get confused. It is weird that Deadpool hangs out with Wolverine, and does Deathstroke hang out with Lobo?
He does this week on the stands.
There you go.
Hey. Sorry, Deadpool Alex, I cut you off when you were saying Jeff Shaw.
Jeff Shaw. Okay, so in this issue, Deadpool is getting messages ostensibly from the future or predicting things so he can stop different crimes. And meanwhile, Hammerhead is trying to track him down and find out what is up with him. There you go. That's the Deadpool news.
Yeah, this is fun. It's got some fun bits in here. I think that, you know, the jumping out of the building with the mobility scooter was hilarious. Yeah, I think that, like, Percy does a good job of, like, kind of capturing some Deadpool moments. I feel like sometimes the voice is a little off, but I think that, like, really felt like some great Deadpool moments in this comic, which I enjoyed. Art's great. This is kind of silly and fun and a nice combination of Deadpool here, so enjoyed this.
Great subway stuff. I found it interesting. There's a panel that takes place where the Liberty Mutual spots are shot.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
That's hilarious, yeah.
The Liberty Mutual. I thought Mutual that was ad. Interesting. Without Liberty being Bibbidi. Referenced. Liberty Bibbidi.
Yeah.
An ad that was perhaps one of the most cheaply made commercials of all time that has become popular enough that there is continuity between the commercials.
Yeah, I mean, those two actors who mispronounce words found each other. It's a beautiful thing.
Pete,
man.
We are just watching not the same television, but similar.
Wrestle Ice, number 4 from Image Comics by Kyle Starks. In this issue, the heist is on as our team of ex-wrestlers trying to get revenge on a promoter who done them wrong, make all the moves. There are, we've said this a lot this podcast, but there are twists and turns aplenty throughout here. This is just a well constructed heist that is a lot of fun. There are some twists you can see coming, but there are even more twists on top of that.
Oh, man.
It's just one of my favorite books month after month. And like we talked about before, when we talked to Kyle about it, he talked a lot about the back matter here, and it is just great. There's ridiculous ads. There's fun interviews, like interview lits, like little bits going on there. Just a really good package of a comic.
It's a tight package. It's amazing writing and art that fits so beautifully together to tell this tale that I don't get tired of being in this world. I think it's interesting characters. I'm pulling for this heist, even though we're kind of being told that the bad guy knows about it, but they still can surprise us. And so it's really, really impressive and such a great read, and every issue really delivers. This continues to be a blast.
Well, Kyle Stark's really doing it all this week, specifically with a lot of great titles. I agree with everything, and such a pleasure to see his art, his fun, bright art on display here.
And last but not least, Thundercats, Silverhawks, Road to War, number one from Dynamite, written by Ed Bryson, art by Gerardo Gambone, Andrea Arcari, Chris Campagna, and Elton Thomas. Here we are seeing what's up with the Thundercats, what's up with the Silverhawks, and what's up with the Thundercats lost in time as they get on that road to war. How long will it take? Will they have to stop for gas? Will they have to stay overnight? We'll find out soon enough.
I hope not. The gas prices are ridiculous.
Gas prices are because of the road to war in reality.
Yeah, exactly.
Great point, Pete.
Yeah.
Pete, always bringing the news into our podcast.
How do you think they're going to open up the Strait of Third Earth?
Well, what's tough, Justin, is we're on different sides of this. I'm Team Thundercat, and you're Team Silverhawk, so I don't know what you think is going to happen here, but I only read half of this because, you know, Saturday mornings you had to decide what team you were on, and, you know, I'm ride or die, so.
Is that true? Did you really only read half this, Pete?
Oh, he just laughs, and he doesn't answer.
Oh, boy.
The thing with this is I did like the Silverhawks, but it was like always a show I saw like once, and I was like, that show was so cool. And then seeing their reality, they seem sort of like jerks.
Yeah.
I think it feels like it's supposed to be even, but you're very much on the Thundercats side here.
Yeah. Thundercats, warm and cuddly, fun. The Silverhawks, ice cold space, mean.
Yeah. And then there's the Thundercats Silverhawks that show up at this issue that I think are the Thundercats lost in time, who are now Silverhawks. Do I have that right?
That was my takeaway from it. But you're talking to both of us like we know what's happening in this. And I would argue that we don't. Because I would argue that the continuity that is laid out in this issue, I was like, I wouldn't start there. Because I would start as one rather than three.
Yeah,
in this story. It's a little wild, the amount of, like, you know what's happening, right? Wink. And I was like, I do not understand your wink.
Yeah. Part that I liked the best was the Thundercats lost in time, and they're in, like, a dark future, and they're dressed as Silverhawks. I was like, oh, that's cool.
Maybe
focus on that.
And I think that is a nice idea all around. But this definitely felt like this conversation that is happening in this issue is they think we know more about it than we do.
Yeah. Oh, well, and that is it for the stack. If you'd like to support our podcast and all the podcasts, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7
sure
p.m.
Do.
To YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Thundercats or Silverhawks or, honestly, whatever. Yeah. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Come on over for a cold one or one warm one. Comic Book Club.